I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the bug that splatters across the windshield of crime. I am Darkwing Duck, and I'm listening to the Canned Air Podcast. How about you?
Welcome to another episode of Canned Air, your tribute to comics and pop culture. I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And returning to the show today to talk about a comic called Plot Sick that looks just fucking awesome.
That
we haven't
had
time to read it yet, as we just got it a few moments before the show, but what we've seen looks incredible. We welcome back to the show comic creator and tattoo artist Adam Sword. Adam, thanks so much for being back with us here today.
Hey, thanks for having me back, man. It's good to be back.
We're going to have some fun today, I think.
Yeah, we are.
We're going to, not being October, you know, I think we did release one in October already that wasn't Halloween themed, but I think from now to Halloween,
we're
going to keep the retros Halloween theme. So we're doing popular witches from across pop culture, and this was an interesting bucket to root around in. Because I was thinking, things started popping up in my mind.
There's a lot to cover there.
It's a lot to cover, for sure, for sure.
My childhood was very shaped by witches, too. Like, when I really was thinking back and trying to come up with some people to talk about, I was like, man, remember that fucking movie Witches? The Ronald Dahl one where the kids got turned into mice and shit? That fucked me right up. I'm sorry, I don't remember. Can I swear on this show? We're good, right?
Yeah.
It's a podcast.
Yeah. Fuck no.
Excellent.
But and then in the comic vault, Jake, what have you got to talk about this week?
Well, our previous guest had discussed another comic by Junji Ito, which is one of those artists where every time I'm reminded of him, I've got to go and find something of his to read. So this week I'm talking about a story called Glyceride, which will leave you feeling like you need to take a shower or possibly two. It's horrendous. Can't wait to talk about it.
Cool. One of the books we'll be talking about there, and then we're going to turn our full attention over to Adam and talk again about Plot 6. So, but before we do that, Jake.
Hey, if you guys like the show, you should visit our website where you can find our whole backlog of episodes, our special guest page, contacts page if you want to reach us for questions, comments, concerns, or perhaps you want to talk about your upcoming project on a new episode. Furthermore, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, we are active all day, every day, so please stop by. On Twitter and Facebook, we are at CannedAirPod. On Instagram, we are at canned_air. Like, subscribe, retweet, share. Just spread us around like a virus. We're doing what we can on our own, but we need help. We need our typhoid Marys.
Right.
Right.
And I started a podcast about 3 months ago. We do a live podcast on Sunday nights.
No shit.
And we hit 9 listeners 1 week, and I was over the fucking moon. I was like, you guys, we almost made it to double digits.
That's a good feeling. I remember that.
What do you want? Like, what do you want to listen to our podcast? What's it about? Nerd stuff? Oh, yeah, sure. Okay. Like, it's hard, man, to sell a podcast unless somebody will listen to the podcast.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth? I'm anxious to hear it now. So after it's live, do you then post the recording?
Yeah, we haven't pushed it real hard yet. Like, they're all available at, we broadcast live through Mixlr. So once it records the broadcast, and then you can automatically upload it, you can mass outload it to fucking SoundCloud or whatever, but we're not really there yet. Like, I'm not pushing hard till November when we get our little studio and proper equipment and shit. So
gotcha. Well, I want to touch on that a little bit later to talk some more about your podcast. I love that stuff, talking to fellow podcasters. What's that?
It can touch any part of the podcast. It's a very friendly podcast.
Awesome.
All about cop.
Speaking of new podcasts, we have a new show ourselves that's going to be debuting.
I need to stop using that phrase. I'm stuck on that.
That we do.
We're going to think I'm some kind of poorly programmed robot.
He's shorting out on us. No, our show What If is, you know, just a few weeks from showing up
that
online.
That it is, Jeremy.
And we're just waiting on some money we're owed from advertising.
Yeah.
A sizable check that once we get, we can really put the wheels in motion and
break a couple of kneecaps.
Yeah, we might be a week or two behind schedule, but know this, ladies and gentlemen, is coming soon. Mm-hmm. New series, What If. We can't wait for it. Head over to Twitter. Find us at What If Series. I think that's right. And on Facebook, I think it's What If PDCST.
Yes, same with Instagram.
Yeah, all those tags, man. Those What If tags are hard to nail down, aren't they?
But, common enough phrase that it's hard right. to stake your claim on that one.
And then really quick, head over to our Patreon page, too, if you're feeling generous and want to support the show. You can, for a few dollars a month, get access to our Patreon pod, which is now going on its 12th month. We're going on a year now. So
congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. Big thanks to everyone who's backed us. But, you know, there's also now, if you sign up, there's a catalog of shows there as well you can listen to. So,
hey, even if you, like, really hate the show, maybe just sponsor us out of spite, you know? That'll really show us
there you go.
How much better you are than us.
I love that idea. Here's like, some dad being like, fuck these guys. I don't want to listen to these guys. Fuck it. I'm going to make them talk more just so I can work.
Makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, let's kick it off with this week's Retro Roundtable.
It's showtime.
Got it, dude.
Spared no expense.
All right, guys.
Witches.
Popular witches. Where do we begin?
I want to start out with something I don't fully understand. I remember way back when I was but a youth, and Hocus Pocus premiered on, what was it, Disney Channel, I think. And yeah, it was fun. I was a kid. You know, my sister really loved it.
Yeah.
It's a decent...
I remember it being in theaters.
Really? I didn't realize it had a full theatrical release.
Well, hell yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, absolutely. That explains it a little more, but... I remember seeing it, liking it to the extent that I could. I mean, I wasn't blown away. And then it almost seems like this year it is exploding.
This is its 25th anniversary.
Oh, see, that invalidates my whole snarky thing.
To be fair, though.
Talk about.
No, like, that's legit, though, because, like, even Spirit Halloween Store last year had an official Hocus Pocus costume section for the first time.
Oh, it was like and it's even bigger this year. Like, they got all kinds of merch. Yeah. I actually took
mugs,
pictures of
Funko
some.
Pops.
Yeah,
yeah, Funko got in on that, and they were like, oh, shit, with, like, Hocus Pocus, how did we not have that?
Yeah, if you look at Doug's Twitter or Instagram, Doug Jones, he has been traveling around with the cast.
Has he really?
Promoting. Yeah. Of course, minus Bette Midler and Thora Birch. Wow, yeah. But, yeah.
Huh.
I don't know. Like, are you not, are you confused by the legendary adoration that this movie has attained for people?
This,
like, is it
enduring
not
enduring popularity? I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I mean, it's fun. It's maybe not my favorite movie in all Christendom, but man,
sure.
People are just foaming at the mouth for it.
Well, it's like anything else, you know, you get a cult following.
Yeah.
And something can manifest a certain amount of popularity, and then at a certain point it starts to roll like a trend, and then people are getting into it just because their friends are into it, and because the people at work
becomes
are into
the
it
cool thing to do.
Hold on though, I totally agree with what you guys are saying in that regard, and like that kind of bandwagon-y viral spreading of fandom, but I feel like maybe you're still watching Hocus Pocus with the idea of it was a flick I liked when I was a kid. Because, like, this movie, it's a very easy hit list. Like, a number one, Drew Struzan movie poster, which is amazing. It's the three of them riding the vacuum in front of the moon, and it's just a stunning flick. You've got Bette Midler, who was a Tom Waits collaborator, right, doing a version of I Put a Spell on You that actually puts a spell on people.
That's a solid cover.
Right. And then Doug fucking Jones, man. Like, this man is the monster of our generation. And what is he in this movie? A fucking, like, Spitfire, sassy ass zombie who slept with Bette Midler and then cheated on her with pre nose job Sarah Jessica Parker.
Hey, let's clarify really quick. I'm not shitting on this movie unjust, because I've always been a fan of this movie. Love this film.
So, like, are you just curious where the fandom's coming from all of a sudden with merch?
I guess that's what it is. Like, and I have to admit, the way you're spinning this, I appreciate where you're coming from. But yeah, to me, it never really got out of that, like, oh, I remember this from when I was younger. I guess I didn't carry it with me the way a lot of people seem to be doing, which is fine, but
it's become like the Christmas Story has to Christmas, where it's like, it's on all the time during the season, and if you haven't seen it two or three times, you feel like you're not doing something right, like you've failed Halloween somehow.
Or it's like the way that they sell copies of A Christmas Story. Who needs to buy a physical copy of that movie?
That's a good point.
Well, I suppose people that no longer have actual television.
Yeah.
But even then, like, if you've given up on TV and you're just streaming, are you really the type that's going to be like, I have to see A Christmas Story this year?
No.
You've eschewed tradition enough. You're like, nope, I'm done with commercials and news and everything. I just want selected programming all the time.
I am a hermit.
TBS just really, really ruined that movie, I think, for a lot of people. I mean, just because... Sure. You know, it's on 24 hours every Christmas, right?
Oh, yeah. Start to finish.
And as much as you dread it, somehow the TV always ends up on it. You
there's
know?
No stopping it.
I don't understand it, how it happens.
There's got to be some shadow government mind control signal embedded in that movie or something that keeps us all docile.
Everybody's just like zombie at the TV. The whole community in unison, like, fragile.
I do want to know what that meeting was like, where like the fucking program editor, I don't know, whoever decides what's on when at a TV station, whatever that job is called. What is that job called?
Scheduler?
It's got to be called something.
I think it's just called
program scheduling.
Yeah, we'll go with that. I want to know that pitch meeting where they're like, listen, Christmas, 24 hours, Christmas Story. And then, like, done. Got their end of year bonus and went on vacation, and that was it.
I have to imagine the pitch was that exact phrase and then, like, a slow clap from all the executives, like, one at a time.
That slow clap came after he pitched it just like this. Get this, guys. We don't have to work Christmas. We'll put the DVD in and hit a fucking repeat and just go home.
My God.
Slow claps. Just raise through the room.
Like, are there any other days of the year we can do this with?
Oh, Halloween.
Like, wait, what about Groundhog Day? It'll be so meta.
Halloween will be the next holiday with Hocus Pocus. I mean, it's kind of already starting to happen, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm all right with it, man. Any merch that I see in a store, which is every store now, it has their nerd gear. Anytime Hocus Pocus can replace some fucking tired ass Nightmare Before Christmas merchandise around Halloween.
Yeah,
that's a slow clap to that, sir.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because when I was at Spirit Halloween, right next to the Hocus Pocus stuff, was you know how they have the big, like, animatronic things, you step on a pedal and it lunges forward at you and screams or something. They had a life-size Jack Skellington and his girlfriend, I don't know what she's called, but you stepped on it and he talks and moves his arms. I thought, this is getting the fuck out of hand. It's like, are people, as I sit here and go, are people buying this? I would guarantee they probably are.
Like, sure.
What's interesting about that is that, like, that apparatus that you just described is superiorly, like, advanced technology to the actual Jack Skellington.
As there is so much more at work there.
Right? Like, he went from just, like, a puppet to, like, the fucking Jamboree Bear Band in one move. And that's a lot of steps. That's like
stone to Iron Age.
Yeah, you have to invent, like, a wheel and find fire before you get that far. Like,
so
clay
much that happens first.
Oh, but my God. All right. Well, let's move forward.
Witches,
from Hocus Pocus. Let's go over to you, Adam. Popular witch.
This is hard for me. I love witches, man. I'm a big witch fan. I married one, man. I'm a huge fan of witches. And, like, the Surly bottle that I did last year for the Surly Company was Baba Yaga. Because I was like, fucking witch, right? Like, I even put her chicken-footed house in the background. It was a lot of fun. I love witches. So this was a tough one for me. I think that, like, I wanted to go Lafayette from True Blood just because I thought he's, like, a really underrated character in the sense that, like, nobody thinks of him as a witch. Everybody loves Lafayette, but they're not like, oh, he's a witch. And he definitely is a witch, specifically, and not a wizard. But
Instead, I think I'm going to pull a little to the left and go back to a very distinct memory of my childhood and go with Grandmama from the Addams Family.
I didn't even think about her.
Right? Yeah. That was my shit, man. Like, Addams Family, obviously, when I was like five and my name was Adam and a movie called The Addams Family came out, I was like, I'm going to see that motherfucker.
Yeah.
That's from my friend's like fourth or fifth birthday party. And we like got a big bucket of popcorn and a huge soda to share amongst the four kids because we were all sitting in a row. I was supposed to pass it back and forth. And I was so engrossed in that movie immediately that I literally drank the entire soda to myself, blissfully unaware that all the other motherfuckers in the row were like, Adam, give me the fucking soda. They probably weren't. I mean, they might have been swearing at that point. I was five. But I just totally unaware. Like, I was just like, this is the greatest film ever. Like, I want to go home and put my sister in an electric chair and have a cool, like, slip and slide that leads to a gold vault. Like, this is the shit.
Yeah, those were fun movies. Those were definitely fun.
There's something phenomenal about that whole Addams Family concept.
Mm-hmm.
You're just surrounded by all this morbidity, and yet probably the most rock solid marriage of any television show couple in history.
Oh yeah, yeah. No kidding. Yeah,
there is no higher relationship goal than Gomez and Morticia. Dude, that is like, but
top of the top.
You have to be in a relationship like that to make that mustache work.
He no longer needs to prove himself.
Yeah, like, you can't just like walk out as a bachelor into the world with that mustache and be like, no, people are going to take me seriously. This is going to work.
All right, guys. This one was right at the top of my, was one of the first things I thought of because it horrified me the first time I saw it. I got this video game. And I was told to play it in the dark with surround sound on. Left 4 Dead.
Oh, good call.
The witches in that game are nothing short of horrifying, especially the first time you come up on one.
You don't really know how to handle it.
You first hear the crying, which just sounds like an innocent
like any child
or a young woman sobbing. And you eventually come on to what looks to be a young woman sitting down on the ground and sobbing into her hand with her back to you. And as you approach, like, you think, I guess my natural reaction at first was to see if I could help.
Oh, shit.
And then when you get up to her, she spins her head and her eyes are just like white and she screams and starts chasing you as fast as she can. And man, that was wicked.
Yeah. Yeah, it's brutal. Unfortunately, it was one of those things that only worked once, you know?
It was. And that whole game was really like that.
Yeah.
You know, they give you all the bad guys pretty much by the second or third level, and you just were doing the same thing in just different environments all the way to the end, which is fine.
Yeah, I guess you don't have online play and stuff like
that. Yeah, it's fine. It was a good game, though.
The second game, which I don't think was as well received, but I liked it because at the time I played it, it was the most absurdly violent game I've ever played. I remember swinging a fire axe, chopping three or four zombies in half, and watching them tumble down the stairs, their intestines falling behind them.
Oh, sick.
And I was like, oh shit, this is my life now. And I remember there was one level, it's like in an old abandoned farm or granary or something.
Yeah.
And there's like nothing but witches. And they're mobile. They're like head in their hands sobbing but like wandering around. You've got to tiptoe your way through all of these witches, because if you spook one, the rest are going to get pissed, and you know it's already a team effort to kill one of them, let alone a dozen. And I thought that was cool. Like, all right, you're used to the witch procedure.
Yeah, they
everybody
were
don't fuck up, you know, so we don't have to deal with it. You avoid it. And they're like, all right, you think you're so good at avoiding witches, here's an entire sequence of witches, you know.
Wow.
Not exactly a less is more kind of philosophy of game design, but it was cool.
I thought I had played the second one, but now I don't think I have. I would have remembered that.
It's more the same, but with fancier gore effects.
Sure. I mean, I would say so. If, like, spilling intestines and rolling down the stairs.
I watched that happen the first time. I was just in awe. I was like, is this okay? Can we see
Did
this?
Did you get a little hard? You probably got a little hard.
I can neither confirm nor deny the erectness that I experienced then, but
I bet you did.
It was a non-zero level of art.
I'm gonna throw this out there right now. I'm stealing Nothing But Witches because that's a killer band name.
Dude,
Nothing But Witches. That's it. That's all
now,
I
here's
got.
The question: do you go love... Nothing But Witches or Nothing like I an apostrophe but Witches? Or
oh no, no, it's got cred. It's nothing. Like, no G's in that band name. Oh. No, nope, it's just Nothing But Witches. We can keep all the G's in the band. And
be all quirky like Nothing For Witches. But, nothing But Witches.
That's Nothing But Witches. Right.
None for
I like that for like that Left for Dead, the idea of like there's probably some dude way down the ladder whose job it was to study the mechanics of intestines slipping downstairs.
Oh, man.
And like if he heard this, he would probably be so happy that like you mentioned that specific detail. Cause he's like, I did that shit. I spent
work.
3 months researching that shit. Fucking Criscoing up sausage links and throwing them downstairs.
Just letting them tumble. Oh man, that's more humane. I just thought he probably just took a pig to the top of the stairs and just spilled his guts right down the stairs.
Oh my God.
I got
so that's how it happens.
God, like in my mind, it like this pursuit destroyed his whole life. Like he dedicated himself body and soul to perfect inert physics, cost him his right. marriage, doesn't even see his kids anymore. But that one guy
possibly
on
rotting
a podcast,
in a jail cell somewhere. Yeah.
Like Christian Bale and The Machinist, just like emaciated. No, I will
it's just eating
it.
Him alive.
It's like the viscosity of the blood will change as it starts coagulating. That'll decrease on the fucking slipperiness. So like, yeah, that's wonderful.
I want him to know his work was not in vain.
Excuse me.
Yeah, we see you, sir. And slow clap.
God bless your service to this country.
All right, Jake, I
More
think we're
witches.
Back to you. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned it, and I kind of snapped at you because I thought you were going to... If it's cool with you, I'm going to talk about Baba Yaga, who's one of my favorite mythological figures of all time.
Hell yeah.
No
my,
idea.
My
who
sister's
that is.
Got a friend with a Baba Yaga tattoo, and I'm half tempted to carve out that little portion of skin and keep it, but they don't let you do that these days. Baba
Actually,
Yaga.
There's a company that will do that for you.
No shit. Wow.
Yeah, when you die, they'll remove your tattoos, stretch them, and preserve them, and then send them to your loved ones.
Oh my God. That's
what the
awesome.
And I'm gonna get fully like I'm heavily tattooed, so my plan is to just get all of them preserved and then send a different one to each member of my family, and then on the anniversary of my death, they can reassemble me from the framed photos, and it'll be all Wicker Man style.
In times of
like
great
Nick
need,
Cage will still be there, and he'll be screaming about bees and shit. It'll be great.
It's like some Buffalo Bill shit. Like you're gonna have like a whole skin suit spread across your family.
My only wish is to be worn after my death.
What do they call that, man? There's a name for that. It's an occult thing where you make a suit out of someone's skin.
Oh, I'm so disappointed that I don't know that.
Me too.
It's a real thing. Like I stumbled upon it when I was researching Hands of Glory. Nope. And it's like a specific type of like the idea is that while you're wearing someone else's skin, you're invulnerable. Necro pants. That's what it is. Thank you, sweetheart. My wife, she was just like, necro pants. I got married, and obviously it was a good call.
Because... Yeah, it sounds that way.
Holy shit.
Very good, very good.
There's another Bobby band Yaga. Name for you.
Fucking Baba Yaga. Please, go
yeah,
on.
Yeah,
I want to hear.
Baba Yaga. Slavic mythology. One of my favorite things in all creation. I can't pronounce half of it, so I'm not going to try and make myself look like a tool, but Baba Yaga is like the archetypal crone hag kind of figure. If there's a story where someone needs to go out in the woods to parlay with someone ancient and powerful, like Baba Yaga is the framework for that story. And depictions change, but there's some constancy. Adam mentioned earlier she's got a house on chicken legs that goes pretty much where she wills it. Sometimes there's mention of a fence made of burning skulls to warn you you're entering her territory. Say at night Ooh. She flies around in a mortar and pestle, which is just...
What the fuck?
I know, right?
A mortar
That's
and pestle.
So
like,
bad
how would that even work? Like she's sitting in it? Like
when you're Baba Yaga, you make it work.
So
it's so much more effective than a broom, too. Like right? A witch isn't going to care about some dust,
you
but like
relax.
She might find some shit and needs to grind up. Like...
So the movie The Witch, remember that? Two or three years ago.
Oh yeah, with the sort of
one of the best horror movies of the last 20 years.
What's that?
Love that. I love that flick, man. It's one of my favorite movies.
I did too, and I'm having a hard time finding people who also love it.
I wasn't a fan. I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to apologize, man. It's a very specific taste. You know what I mean?
It,
like, that's not like, it's like when I tell people that Brazil is my favorite movie. Oh,
dude.
I never expect anybody to agree.
You know how many people I've tried to get to watch that movie? I'm like, you got to watch Brazil. Terry Gilliam's a genius. This is going to change you. And then they'll come back like, yeah, I didn't get it. I'm like, oh, come on, man. Just.
I use the term, I go like, if Monty Python did 1984, you would have Brazil.
And if that phrase doesn't sell them right off the bat, then maybe there's no.
Yeah. I'm really trying to get everything. Like, I'm working on my elevator pitches, so I'm just taking other ones.
Anything you can chop down. I'm like, how can
I throw this down to 1 sentence?
I don't think I'm going to get... I'm not a Monty Python fan either, really. I don't think...
So that's a big issue.
I feel like a third wheel to your guys' show here. I'm just going to kind of sit by and listen to y'all talk.
We got to talk about Baba Yaga in Brazil. We're heavily representing for these tonight.
So another witch that would maybe be inspired by what you guys are talking about, that I have on my list here, is a witch you never really even see in the movie, Blair Witch.
Blair Witch. I was actually just going to say that, man. The most famous witch that you've never seen.
Right, yeah.
And yeah. You get all three movies, creepy. She's not in any of them.
Oh, I forgot there was a... What? The third one was fairly recent, too, right?
Yeah, I went and saw that, and they give you some glimpses, which don't really make sense.
Go ahead.
And as an aficionado and a Blair Witch enthusiast, the creature that you see in Blair Witch is not actually supposed to be the Blair Witch.
Oh, what's the official story?
It's left very much ambiguous. But like when people were talking about it, and the filmmaker was like, "It's not the witch." Huh. Like the witch is present, and that is an agent of the witch, but it's not specifically the witch. That, like, the one running through the forest. Once you get into the house, I think there is a screenshot where she shows up, like her face does, like towards the end. I literally did an alt movie poster for Blair Witch last night and have watched all three of them in the last 72 hours.
Oh, holy shit. The third one, please refresh me. I saw the second one in the theater, and boy, was I disappointed.
Yeah, horrible flick. Oh, man.
Horrible. Yeah, I mean, because it really became a movie then. It wasn't the, you know, teenagers with the camera in the woods. Did the third one go back to that at all?
The third one is the documentarian from the first film. It's her younger brother. And it's an accurate amount of time since the release of the 94 footage to the 2016 footage. So, like, he's in his early 20s now, and he decides to go out and try to figure out what happened because somebody sent him footage, and he thinks he sees his sister in it, and it's recent footage. So he takes his crew out, and they try to figure out if, like, his sister's still out there.
Is it worth seeing, guys?
I was pleasantly surprised. I came in with pretty low expectations.
Yeah.
What'd you say, Adam?
I think it's a great flick, man. And to be fair, I'm kind of entering into this point in my life where all I see is the silver lining. I just even Blair Witch 2 Book of Shadows, not a great flick, but there is, they were talking about how there was a scene added to that movie. And the footage of them, the footage they find of them traipsing off into the night and killing the other hitchhikers and like doing the black mass and everything, that was not originally in the film. So what happens is that movie changes from, you see these people who lose their memory and find out that they were bewitched by the Blair Witch and then, you know, murdered a bunch of people. But without that, it becomes a very ambiguous statement. You're like, wait a sec, were they possessed or were they just like crazy? Did they even do it? You know, and it's a much sharper flick that way. But Blair Witch, the direct sequel to the original, it disregards Book of Shadows, is a really solid flick, man. There's a lot of good jump scares. You know, we've had found footage films forever now, starting because of the Blair Witch.
Yeah. Right. And what a bombshell it was when it came out. I mean, it was hard to avoid. It was, and I think a lot of people, I think for a long time, I think even myself included, you know, it was kind of sold as a real thing. This really happened. This is real footage. Because yeah, again,
it's like when you don't outwardly deny it, you're just like,
well, that you didn't see that kind of movie either. Right. So it's like, oh wow, this just looks like found footage.
Man, I remember when I was young and fragile, and I couldn't watch horror movies because I just couldn't handle it. That was the one that like I forced myself. I'm like, okay, we're gonna see how brave we are, and it scared the holy hell out of me. It was awesome, but it scared me in the right way, and it just felt correct, but. Oh, man, the third one was solid. And, you know, I'm just a sucker for that, like, lanky, pale ghoul type of monster that you just catch a glimpse of, you know, so.
It's almost like Slender Man's, like,
kind of older the Wraith sort of deal.
Yeah, it's really, it's nice, man. I liked the design in that flick a lot, too. And it didn't just rely on jump scares. There's, like, some very real claustrophobia that comes into play.
That was hard to watch.
That was rough, right? Like, I've been watching horror movies my entire life. I've never slept much. And I have a sister who's 6 years older than me, and she was really into horror. So when I was young, I would sneak out of my room because she would have, like, friends over to watch movies, and they'd turn all the lights off. So I'd, like, army crawl, and our couch had an angled back. So there was this little amount of space between the wall and the couch. And I would shimmy in there and watch the horror movies from behind the couch. So, like, I'm, you know, four or 5 years old, and I've seen the Nightmare on Elm Street series, the Friday the 13th series, and Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and, you know, the original Last Out, like raw stuff. And so for me, it's a lifelong interest. I love horror movies. Like, my Inktober, I'm doing, instead of one ink drawing, which is not that hard to do a day, I'm doing an alternate movie poster for every weekday in October.
Oh, shit.
And they're all horror-based, with the exception of the Joaquin Phoenix Joker poster I did, because that was just... I had the idea on October 2nd, and I was like, look, I already did one.
I would see that. I would love to see that. I'm such a big fan of the way he looks as the Joker.
Yeah, I'm really amped about that flick, and I don't know, I don't have a huge circle, but there was a lot of grumbling about it, and I just had all these Heath Ledger flashbacks. So my goal with the poster was very specifically, like, I gotta paint a portrait of Joaquin Phoenix that is gonna make people shut up and just be excited. Like, you have to go into DC movies with zero expectation pockets full of optimism. I have this whole theory about the DCU, the Snyderverse, man, about how it's not, the reason people don't like them is because they go for superhero movies and what they get are Greek tragedies. So you have to watch them in a specific order, and you have to start with the ultimate cut of Watchmen.
Oh.
Because that's what gets you into Snyder's world. But I did an hour and a half long podcast about how Justice League was awesome, and it started with fucking Buffy. I was like, we have to go all the way back to the beginning of Joss Whedon to understand why Justice League is a really good movie.
We just last week on the show had some guys on that were really talking about the the Astonishing X-Men. The Astonishing X-Men that Joss Whedon did so highly. And then by chance, the very next day, I was talking to somebody who out of the blue just recommended the same book. Yeah. So, I'm reading those right now, and they're good reads thus far.
Yeah, Joss Whedon, he's very hit or miss, and he's not a strong finisher. Like, the last season of Buffy has another... I mean, Buffy has another very prominent pop culture witch in Willow, who was one of the first like, positive, non-manipulative witches to be featured on primetime television. Because, like, when you look at, Bewitched, here's a witch who's just got an idiot for a husband who she's constantly having to save and, like, push around. He's basically an accessory in the show. That they replace him as an actor and nobody mentions it. And then you've got, like, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, who, again, like, as a, you know, growing up with Nickelodeon, Clarissa was a huge deal. And then I'm like, oh, now she's magic. That's even better. Again, she's kind of that faltering witch where she's using her power to influence people's behavior in a way that's, you know, self-serving and not necessarily altruistic or for their best interests. But Willow comes along in Buffy, and, like, you feel for this character for a few seasons before suddenly she's a witch. And then she does exactly what you want a witch to do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But then, you know, the show ends and Joss Whedon continues the comic show, the story in comic book form. I think it was season 8 or 9 was a comic book. And like issue 2, suddenly Buffy is a lesbian. Like, just like out of nowhere, you're like, oh no, Buffy's a lesbian. Yeah, Spike and Angel, don't worry about that. So like,
forget everything you know.
Yeah, and like I wanted to do this for years, but I was on TV, so now I can do it. And so he's, you know, he's kind of hit or miss for me. Like he either does really, really good, or he does Dollhouse.
There's no gray area there.
There's really not, man. He's a Spinal Tap creator. It's always 211, and if you're into it, it's your thing. And if it misses, it really fucking misses.
He's got that Babe Ruth thing going.
Right.
Oh man, this is running a little bit long. I'm afraid we're going to have to move on. But damn, what's some this is some good witch talk. I want to keep going, man. But I'll be editing for days if I do.
Witches part 2 next week.
Witches part 2 next week. We'll have to talk about that maybe. But yeah, we need to move on. We're about what, 40 minutes in.
Oh geez, sorry. I do get chatty. I apologize.
No, no, I'm not. Hey man, that is the point.
Can you believe this Adam guy, Jake? Jesus.
What a piece of shit.
Right?
Wants to come onto our podcast and be an engaged interviewee?
No, we just need to move on because we have some... We're just going to have to skip the t-shirt commercial this week.
No one's buying the
Society6.com/CannedAirPod. Get t-shirts, decals, all that happy just horseshit. But our dear friends over at Adult Swim... I've sent some more things,
Jake. Is it gift-giving day again?
It is gift-giving day again, yes. Wow. 2 boxes this week. 2 boxes.
Jesus. They must really want our love.
They want our love desperately. And in this one right here...
Not enough to be present in our lives, but enough to get us lots of gifts.
Correct. And this one here, you'll see they sent a dead bird. No,
oh, my God. What the fuck? Why would you do that to me? For a second, I was sure that's what it was.
So it's not a dead bird.
Son of a bitch.
It is a pillow of some kind of robot.
Is this from the old Dream Analysis?
Dream Corp.
Dream Corp, that's the
Dream
one.
Dream Corp LLC, Season 2, October 21st. Take weekly on Sundays at midnight, it says.
Oh, God. I remember when I was in Austin seeing a big mural on a wall that said, "We analyze your dreams." Just analyze, cut up in the worst possible way. It's fucking wonderful.
I think it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's got a very retro-futuristic droid thing going.
Right, right. I dig him.
There's something endearing about the robot that's just cobbled together out of shitty, outdated electronics.
Yeah, and it's not a dead bird. So, I mean, that helps.
That's a plus. I like birds.
That was the best way to start that segment, because no matter what's in those boxes now, people are like, whew, at least it's not a dead animal.
Not a dead animal.
Adult Swim going off the deep end, just fucking mailing out dead birds.
Dude, that was some beautiful wordplay. You're like, Adult Swim, fucking deep end, I'll make a swimming joke.
Oh my lovely. God, I didn't even think about
wow.
that.
That was so good.
I can't take credit for that.
I'm going to...
You got some, like, Rain Man podcast skill right there. It's just like, no fucking callback.
He's doing it when he's not even aware of it.
It just comes naturally, just comes I out. Guess.
Dream Corps LLC, Season 2, October 21st at midnight. Set the DVRs, people. And then...
Cool, cool.
We have another package.
My God.
Maybe this one is the dead bird. Let's see what we got
here. Greedy, Jeremy. It was funny the first time.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Kind of a dead bird. We've got Harvey Birdman.
Oh my God!
It's not they literally just like, what do we have in the basement?
Right. Well, no, it looks like he's coming back. This is Harvey Birdman, Attorney General.
Good for him.
But this is a card. It's a card that has his face in gold on the front. You open it, it says the presidential. Inaugurapeachment committee requests the honor of your presence at the inaugurapeachment of Phil Ken Sieben, 46th and a half president of the United States. Midnight, Sunday, October 14th on Adult Swim. Let's see what they sent us here.
Man.
It's a hat. This is already Jack's, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Jack, he's, I think, is the only one that wears ball caps.
Hey, it's not a fucking flat bill, so...
Okay.
46.5.
This hat is supposed to be a Make America Great Again play.
It's certainly a spin on that whole angle.
But it just says 46.5 on it.
Thanks, Adult Swim.
Yeah. You never know what you're going to get.
No.
Nope. You never know.
You really don't, do you?
You just don't. We've gotten some cool shit, though.
Oh, yeah.
Kites, shot glasses.
The shot glasses come to mind.
Rick and Morty action figures.
Oh, yeah.
What time is it? Dead box.
What's... So, again, Harvey Birdman, Attorney General, October 14th, Sunday at midnight. Set your DVRs. I'm really excited to see that.
One time they mailed own grandfather's ashes. I don't know how they fucking got them.
What if they brought back Space Ghost Coast to Coast?
Oh, dude.
That would be tight.
We'd stop being Canned Air immediately and we'd become a recap podcast for Space Ghost episodes.
I would be interested to see like the Space Ghost No Coast and just have it be like bumpkin Midwesterners in the Space Ghost world reacting to current politics and pop culture.
That would be fun.
Just like some like Space Ghost sitting on a John Deere tractor.
Ooh, or you, like, you could even do like a Space Ghost version of like Tosh.0 or something. That would be funny.
Like a clip show host. Yeah. Kind of
I'm Space Ghost,
and our writers don't do much.
We just have the episodes go wrong and blame it on that, what was the name?
Looks like we don't have that clip. Zorak.
Yeah. Oh, my God. All right. Very good. Very good. Thank you, Adult Swim, for all the goodies, the hats, the pillow, the dead birds. And again, we'll rattle those dates off here again at the end of the episode. And with that, let's swing open the door to the comic vault. Let's keep it brief as we're running out of time. Let's keep it just a few minutes apiece. Jack, or God damn it, Jake, do you want to go first?
How dare you? Yeah, I'll go first. I've talked about this author before, Junji Ito. I'm not so hot on Japanese comics or animation, but this guy in particular has got a direct link to the shit that interests me. He always seems to find a way to get me involved. And he has a whole bunch of short, profoundly disturbing horror stories. This one that I read was called Glyceride. It's about a girl who lives with her brother and father, her mother long since dead, in an apartment above a barbecue restaurant her father owns. And it opens up, she's talking about how the ventilation is horrible and the air is heavy with grease and the wallpaper's peeling and their clothes are always filthy no matter how much they wash them. Their skin is disgusting and gross. And that becomes this theme of like the oppressive, heavy greasiness of it to the point where you can almost feel it on your skin the more you read. Her brother is some sadistic psychopath who torments her every chance he gets, and she catches him pulling bottles of frying oil from the cupboard and drinking them straight. His skin starts to break out into boils and pustules, and he starts to leak fluids, and it's horrendous. And it's kind of her descent into madness, realizing her family is just never going to bounce back from this weird, obsessive thing they have in it. And her home gets filthier, her brother and father get stranger, and it's difficult to explain what's frightening about it. It's less about what happens in the story as the feel you get when you're reading it.
When you say frightening, do you just mean like a claustrophobic aspect of what
there's a dread to it. When you put yourself in that girl's shoes, you're just like, how you know?
It makes me think of episodes of, not that I've watched this show on the regular or anything, but I've seen the show Hoarders, and you know, you see
it's instances kind of got that vibe, yeah,
where there are family members just driven away because, you know, as children, you know, they might be tidy, might be clean, but you know, they're watching the walls, you know, close in on them because of all the garbage.
And you get
a very real situation, yeah.
Two sides of that same coin. It's like the horror of living in that state, and what's even more frightening is what you can get used to, you know? So it definitely gives you that vibe, and it's frightening and horrific, and I feel a little dirty just talking about it. So I highly recommend it. Junji Ito, Glyceride.
Glyceride.
That's the one.
Very good, very good.
Prepare to see pictures of it, whether you like it or not, on Twitter, so...
Very good. Adam, would you like to go next?
Yeah, sure. This one isn't that old. It's literally just the last thing I read. And it just came out in trade edition. It's a book called Batman White Knight by Sean Murphy.
I'm very curious to hear about this because I've just seen that title and I know nothing about it.
It's the first book officially. It was retroactively put on DC's Black Label, which is kind of like it's like a hybrid of Vertigo and Elseworlds. It's for people to tell like more adult and darker like DCU stuff without affecting canon. So Sean Murphy, the book itself is about the premise is that Joker takes a specific medication and is cured and becomes Jack Napier again and runs for public office on a one percenter, like an anti one percenter platform, and points to Batman as one of Gotham City's primary tools of oppression. And like this whole, like a vigilante in a way you don't think about it. Like, why does he always wind up exploding buildings that are in poor income areas? Like, you never see, like, you know, like Wayne Tower will catch on fire once in a while, but it's like when there's these huge city wrecking areas, it's always like in the poor part of town. So he takes public office, and I won't give away the farm with it. It is one of the best Batman stories I've read in a long time. And when I say long time, I've only been reading Batman for about a year, but I've read a lot of Batman in that year, like kind of a gross amount. And it's poignant, it's topical, it's gorgeous. Also, because it's this Black Label, he basically got to put whoever he wanted to in it. So he took a lot of characters from the Batman animated series and inserted them in an updated fashion into the story. Jack Napier and Harley have a very healthy, okay relationship because he's not crazy and abusive anymore. Like they have a date night. It's really cute. Like you're sitting there watching them like play, like shoot pool and have cocktails, and you're like, oh my god, this is adorable. And you're like, this is fucking Joker and Harley. But it's just, it's a really solid book. And Sean Murphy's got a very specific style, but I really dig his creator-owned books where he writes and draws. He did a book called Punk Rock Jesus that was all his. That was really, really solid. And he's done, you know, killer stuff with Joe the Barbarian with Grant Morrison, and he did a run on Hellblazer with Cy Spencer. He did The Wake with Scott Snyder. His pedigree is just really nice. Chrononauts with Mark Miller, like, his stuff's top notch. So getting to see him do Batman is really rad. It's a great book.
That sounds amazing. That's something I've never even considered, like the Joker being cured. Like that's something that's never.
How does that change the dynamic?
Yeah, because you kind of see in the Dark Knight Returns, you know, what the absence of Batman does to the Joker. You know, he just kind of shuts down, goes dormant. Yeah. So, but the opposite way, how does the Batman react without? I gotta see that. I gotta read that.
Yeah. Trade just came out this past week, and it's worth every penny.
Awesome.
I will do that. All right, very good. What I have this week is a comic that I have not even read yet. It is a comic that is very new, and it's available to be read online at Tapas. It's TAPAS. It's like a webcomic forum you can go to. People sign up and upload their strips on there.
Cool.
And what this is from Black Spot Comics, and they're a comic publishing company in the UK, brand new. And the reason they reached out to us is because their first comic they're putting up, called Whistleblower, is another extension to the universe of Snow the Dawn, which is a comic that Nick Goode and Harry Hughes...
Sort of the dystopian London split into
boroughs. Yeah, it's like set in the future. I think it's like 2079.
Yeah.
And like, what was it, global warming and like terrorist attacks and bombings.
Sea levels rise.
Right, so it's kind of like driven all these like different boroughs, like quartered off, walled up boroughs of London.
Almost has like this feudal fiefdom thing going.
Right, and you know, they not only established that, but then they started extensions to that universe, and then have even, you know, let other people expand their universe in their own way, which I am just such a fan of, because, I mean, I guess that's really what...
Anything that deepens the setting like that is awesome.
But in that way, you know, we've had people who are universe building on the show before, but they're trying to do it all themselves.
Right.
Which, you know, there's nothing wrong with. I mean, you still get a great story that way.
This
but
kind
at the
of
same,
shared storytelling.
On the other side of that coin, yeah, when you're letting other people come in and add their two cents to the story and, you know, take it down a direction you may have never considered, but wow, this is changes everything, you know? Yeah, I just love that. And that's what this is, called Whistleblower. And all I have here is a brief description that says, London, 2079, surrounded on all sides by damn walls. The last citizens on Earth are contending with claustrophobia. Cracks are appearing in the veneer of order, and moralities are as gray as the encroaching sea. And in the back streets of Islington, a man with no memory wakes up in the road. A fresh tattoo on his hand brands him a criminal, but for what crime, he does not know. As a new threat looms in the underbelly of London, he either needs to stand and run or be swallowed by the city, body, and soul. And again, you can head over to Tapas. I just Google it. I don't remember the if it's just tapas.com, but T-A-P-A-S.
Easy enough to find.
Should be. And we'll have links on our Twitter and website as well. But it's called Whistleblower. And I believe it's free to be on that on Tapas, so you could read it now. And they said within the year they're going to have issues available. Cool. But they're on Instagram at Black Spot Comics. Give them a look. Check them out. Check out the whole universe. It's really cool.
Wow, so world breaking down in 2079. That sounds a little optimistic.
Yeah.
You're giving us a little longer than you'd expect. That's...
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Well, I think that's actually longer than the UN summit has just like yesterday or today announced that we have.
I saw like something about that in the news.
It's like we have 39 years to figure something out before it's like irreversible damage or some bullshit like that.
Sounds great.
I already thought we were in the irreversible.
Got that zone. Great filter coming our way.
Yeah.
Well, there's oh, good. That's a whole nother podcast, man.
That it is, my God, that it is. But until then, let's turn our attention over to you, Adam, and just talk a little bit more about your podcast, something I want to talk about, and this freaking comic, Plotsick. Again, we only got to see a few images, you know, that we got right before we started the show, but damn, they look really good, and I'm digging the art style. Thank you. So what can you tell us about this comic?
Plotsick kind of it arose out of experiencing writer's block and then kind of having anxiety about it in a way that I hadn't really considered before. And it was the idea that, like, okay, when you really are into a story, when you get to that point where the characters seem to be making their own decisions and you're just kind of transcribing the logical progression, there's a world there that you've built in your mind. And I don't know how other writers work, but like my, the way I work, the way things process for me is I kind of slip into those worlds mentally a little bit and I'll look at different things around me from that viewpoint. And that will inform some of the smaller aspects of the story, little decisions that can have big consequences. And the idea that, like, okay, so I'm writing this main character's life. And if I get stuck for like 6 months, what happens to this character? Does his life stop? Or does his life continue in like a loop because I can't figure out where the story goes next? And much like Electric Hangover has those pages where the author and the writer are arguing about how they're telling the story.
Right.
This is kind of it's thematically linked in a very specific way into the not just the relationship between the creator and the creation, but the responsibilities that come along with that relationship and the consequences of it. But it's all kind of wrapped up in this very, very noir feel. It's a detective story at its heart. The main character is a detective and he's trying to solve a mystery. That mystery is in a lot of ways a lot more metafictional than he initially anticipates it to be. And it's a very dense book. Like at the convention this last weekend, man, I kept telling people, like, listen, this is not an easy comic, but I love it so much. So just give it a fucking shot, huh? Like my buddies are like, you need to stop pitching this comic to people and let us do it. Like my wife read it. She was like, this is awesome. And I was like, oh, good. She liked it. So I started launching into all the different like
The art style specifically shifts throughout the book, and each style of artwork is representational of a different layer of narrative. And there's a bunch of supplemental material that's being worked on, sample chapters from books that don't exist and interviews in magazines that don't exist, which will be press clippings included with the physical copy of the comic. It's a huge undertaking for a very, very ambiguous story. And even in the intro, the inside cover, which I don't think you guys saw, I straight up say, like, this book kind of stands in opposition to everything I've been taught throughout my career as an illustrator will make a book more marketable or give it more mass appeal. This book is just, you know, pissing off the top of a building onto all of those rules.
I'm very intrigued to read this now.
I'm down.
Seeing, you know, I'm anxious to see exactly one, how you represent that writer's block. I mean, I'm sure the character just doesn't stop, you know, check his watch, look at the, you know, look at the panel, break the fourth wall, or, you know, just something's got to be happening there, I'm sure. And I'm anxious to see what that is. But, you know, just based on what you sent, it looks to me like when there's a flow going, it's a one art style, and when there's not, like when the artist is being seen, it looked like there was like a strong, like colored pencil kind of art happening. Is that, am I correct in that?
Yep. So without, again, like, I guess it's not really giving away the farm because nobody's really read it yet, but
I'm sorry if I'm prying too much, trying to get too much story.
Like, I've put so much thought into this that it's thrilling to finally talk about it. The interrogation scene, which is prevalent as a narrative base throughout the series, is all done very physically first. It's all colored pencil and watercolor and paint and, you know, scratching up the paper for texture. And then there's some digital overlays, but they're very specific. Then when it gets into the proper detective yarn, the Lester Dent Master Pulp formula style comic book, that is actually all done digitally. I think it gives it a little bit more of a formulaic or processed feel. A lot of those original detective pulps were written according to the pulp formula, and they were churned out, you know, they were structured. And I'm a big fan of like the Dresden Files, which Jim Butcher openly stated. He's like, I never planned on writing this series. I was having writer's block. My literature instructor advised me, he's like, hey, why don't you try writing to a formula? Just see what happens. And now we're like 16 books later. like a television series and a role-playing game and a series of graphic novels. And it's become this thing. And I'd eat a lot of crow when I went digital with some of my artwork because I was such a physical guy. And I was like, fuck pixels and fuck this and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it's just a tool. And Right. Yeah, this tool might make it easier for some people to make art. But acrylic did the same thing when oil painting was prevalent. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, the easier it is for you to get what you see in your head out into the world, vilifying that is pointless. Because the easier it gets, the more people are going to want to do it, because then it's less about the technical aspect and it's more about the expression, the creative expression.
It's like when GarageBand was made available to the common man and everybody became a musician overnight.
Right? Absolutely. No, that's a prime example, man. I'm one of those people. I just finished it.
Same here.
Right? Like, Plotsic is, that's kind of what it is. It's going to be, right now, the rough outline is 16 issues. It's going to be collected eventually with a lot of the supplemental material. But each book comes with extra stuff. It's not just the comic that you get. It was kind of inspired by this subscription box service we had called, To Hunt a Killer. And they send you like a box of clues and letters and shit. And so every month you're trying to solve these crimes, and it was a lot of fun.
It's a cool comic.
It was very interactive. If I can get somebody to look at my comic book, which, I mean, that issue is like 12 pages. It's a short book. If I can get them to give me that much of their time looking at paper in exchange for giving them a bunch of other shit to look at on their phone, like, that's a fair trade.
Yeah.
Like, I'll make a bunch of digital content if that's where people are at, as long as they still read the book. And the book stands alone. Like, you will be able to just read the comic and be fine. But each issue is going to come with extra shit that's only really going to be available in that form with the single issue purchase.
And who can beat that? I mean, who loves... I love tack ons, any kind, oh, especially yeah. if it's going to enrich that that experience with that book. That's amazing. Sure. So where do people get this then?
Right now, it's available for pre-order on my website at swordjaws.com. The book, all the first issues come with an original illustrated postcard, like an original illustration on a postcard, which has some stuff written on the back. So you get an original piece of art with the comic book. I think it's $5. Starting Wednesday around the Minneapolis Metro, it's in some shops, but I haven't really pushed any farther than that. You know, it's just me in my apartment doing this shit, so we don't have a distribution label or anything.
Sure.
Also, if you're on Steemit, if you guys are familiar with Steemit.
No, I haven't heard of it.
It's a blockchain style. It's kind of like Reddit, but you actually earn money by posting content.
Oh, really?
Cryptocurrency, but nonetheless, yeah. Like I think right now my account is worth like $100, which I could literally cash out into $100.
Wow.
Minus conversion fees from cryptocurrency to actual currency. But there's a good chunk. There's like a 7-page preview over there, but you know, I'm not really, I'm kind of at this point right now too, between illustrating and tattooing part-time. Fuck freebies. If it looks interesting to you, support it. If it doesn't look interesting enough based on the cover and the shit that I put out, I'm not just going to give like previews to people. Sure. Like on my website. I used to do that. I used to be like, here's half the book. Now please pay for the rest. And like, whatever, dude. I don't really, I'm making this book to edify myself because I want to be able to look up on my shelf and see it under P for plot sick.
Right.
And if other people dig it and they enjoy it, then that's awesome. I'd love to talk to them about it. But at the end of the day, you know, I make books that I want to read because they are not available for purchase until I make them.
You're going to reach the right kind of people either way.
Sure.
Yeah, nobody is going to accidentally get really into this book.
But it's, you know, you're making something that's not out there, yeah. Which means there's are people out there who are hungry for something that doesn't exist that you're going to provide. Yeah, Jake's absolutely right.
There's a vacuum in an idea or a fiction. There's someone who's like, oh, if only it had this and this and this.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Look, I'm happy for you. And it's a beautiful book. I can't wait to actually read it. And
yeah, I'm excited to think.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll definitely let you know. But I got to touch a little bit on your podcast as well. What did you say this show was called?
It's the Illustrated Friends Live Podcast. It's on Sunday nights around 9 p.m. We will never start before 9.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes we start a little bit after 9. it's myself, my buddies Max and Billy, who are... longtime friends of mine. Billy has been working conventions with me as like my buddy for like a decade, and I've tattooed both of them extensively, which is kind of where they illustrated.
Belong to you at this point, right?
Yeah, well, I think we came up with a great pun for that. It was the Billy board and the Max advertisement. They have some of my favorite tattoo work that I've done, but the podcast started because Max and I were at our tattoo appointments. We'd get less and less done each time because we were talking so much. Finally, I was like, why don't we do a podcast? So we pre-recorded 37 hours of podcasting.
And then I found out
we could do it live. And I was like, oh, let's just do that. So maybe someday those 37 hours will see the light of day, but a lot of the segments that we do now are kind of based on ideas we had then. It's a segment structured show. We have Billy Talks Us Movies, in which Billy watches movies, makes notes, and then retells us the movie.
Right.
For instance, Jeepers Creepers took 5 episodes to get through.
Wow.
And he'll describe like camera movements, and he'll paraphrase dialogue, and then of course we need to react to what he's telling us, because we try to do movies that at least one of us haven't seen. Then Max does a segment. It's an NPR like spoof of like this, a day in this life. It's called This Digital Life. And he does very dry, serious human interest pieces on characters from video games. often like B, C, or D level characters too, because he's really into the little stuff. I do a segment which is turning into audiobooks that'll be available for free come November called Goosebumps Noir, where I read Goosebumps books out loud in the voice of like a 50s detective over jazz music.
Just what they needed to really.
Yeah. Because, like, you know, a lot of the stars of Goosebumps are like 12-year-old girls named Hannah. So to hear them sound like Deckard or Tom Waits is I don't know. I think it's I laugh a lot. It's hard to do live because I start laughing at myself. And then we do, you know, we also keep up on the production stuff. I wrote a screenplay this past summer and we're filming it this spring. So we kind of keep up on what that process is like of making an indie film and trying to get financing and learning about equipment, because my entire crew has never made a movie before. My DPs have done some music videos and that's about, and then we have special effects and sound who have a little bit of experience, but nothing on this level. So we talk about that and we have some other projects too. We're doing like radio dramas. So it's kind of an accountability blog too. We kind of talk about what we're going to try and do the next week. And then we make fun of each other if we didn't get that accomplished. And we talk about, you know, mental health and the importance of creation and camaraderie. And I don't know, man, I really like it. I look forward to it every week. It's a lot of fun.
It becomes a therapeutic thing, doesn't it?
Billy's therapist literally told him after we had done it for a couple of, probably about 2 months, that it was one of the most proactive, effective, and healthiest things he had attempted since he had started talking to her. And we talk about that on the podcast, man. It's really cool that just being around people that like get you and your sense of humor and are into the same things as you and are only interested in your well-being and your betterment.
Right.
It's a thing that like people lose sight of, man, because sociability becomes so much about where you're going and what you're doing and what it looks like that, you know, the art of just having a conversation has become so antiquated that now people listen to podcasts, which are just motherfuckers having conversations. Mm-hmm. Like it's a market now. Like, oh, these people talk to each other real good. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Go talk to your friends. Get a fucking microphone. Make podcasts. Like,
it's unlike the reaction videos you see on YouTube. Sure. You need a surrogate to feel for you these days.
Exactly. Like PewDiePie, like all he did would play video games and react oddly to it. And then he got a show. And like, it's one of those things where, you know, our teachers told us when we were young, you need to know algebra because it's not like you're going to have a calculator on you at all times. They couldn't have predicted cell phones.
Right.
I mean, Gene Roddenberry did, but they couldn't have because they're
right. They're just teachers at a high school.
But on that same note, man, like when we were playing video games growing up, you know, our parents were like, well, those will rot your brains. And now it's literally like, actually, this will provide me with income until I die. So like, good luck with fucking Medicare. And so, yeah, I think that it's really fun, man. I love doing the podcast. We do game time, too, where we play like argument based games. Last night we mashed up Super Fight with Red Flag. Super Fight, you like build a superhero from drawing random cards, and then Red Flag is you try to make a date for somebody and then your opponents play red flags on them. Like, you know, a gymnast who farts cotton candy in her sleep but swears she's 18. You know what I mean? So like then people have to choose the least objectionable date. So we combine them to make Super Date.
That sounds which monstrous. Was, you know,
it was a lot of cards, but it was a lot of like 15 cards each. We're like, ah, Jesus. But so yeah, that's the podcast, man. The Illustrated Friends podcast. The Illustrated Friends is the name of our production crew. That's who doing my music videos. That's we're doing a puppet based dystopian Care Bear reboot fan film. That's a hell of a sentence, but it's going
to
be fun.
I was just going to say, wow, like my brain
shut
down for a second.
Give me just a moment to catch up to
that. Yeah, I can repeat that if you need me to. It is a puppet-based dystopian Care Bear
fan film reboot.
No, it sounds awesome. It really
it's
does.
It's like when they read all the specials to you at once at a restaurant. You're like, just give me a second. Just, it all sounds good. Just
pretzel.
Are they still Care Bears at that point?
Well, because my suggestion on the pod last week or the week before was that we change them from Care Bears to Love Bugs. so that we can actually make merchandise and everything. But all we'll do, because like the way we're doing it is I'm drawing the characters on paper and then we're gluing them to popsicle sticks and then we're moving them around, but we're doing full sound production, like Foley score, voice acting, the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like, well, I'm just going to draw the Care Bears, but I'm going to give them antennas and bug wings. And then we'll take pictures of whoever's voice acting them and cut tiny printouts of their faces out and put them on the Care Bears as though it's a human wearing a costume. So that's kind of where the aesthetic's at right now. And we give away the farm on everything on that show because we literally create stuff as we're going on the podcast.
Wow. Yeah, you guys are a horse of many tricks. You guys do so many different things. It's really cool.
Yeah, we could probably scale back, but, you know, until...
I mean it in a bad way.
I agree, though. Like, I like that we do all the stuff. Sometimes, though, I think about it. I'm like, well, I also still want it to just be me getting together to talk shit about nerd stuff with my buddies.
Sure.
We're drafting a fantasy football for film where, like, you have a stable of actors that you've acquired. And then we pick a movie and you have to recast the movie with your actors and then explain how the movie would be different.
That'd be fun.
You know, like if you made Danny DeVito Darth Vader.
Well, you'd have a better movie right off the bat. So let's get that out of the way.
Danny DeVito's actually, he's a trump card because like he makes every movie better.
That's a fact.
Cosplay as Darth Vader. I mean, that'd be amazing.
Then of course, we took the whole cast of It's Always Sunny and redid Star Wars with them.
As well you should.
Right. I think we landed on the McBoyles as R2-D2 and C-3PO.
With, like, none of the charisma or charm that makes people like those characters.
Yeah, it's an evolving thing, man. And I don't know, I'm really into it. We've been doing it, like I said, we did 37 hours in the bank, but we've been doing it live for... shit, 3 or 4 months now. We get in every Sunday. Sometimes one of us will be gone, like at the end of this month. The 28th is a Sunday. That's my wedding anniversary. I'm not going to be there. Then we're starting to do giveaways and stuff too. Like I'll give away prints, and I think this month Billy's doing a toy giveaway with some pops and some blind boxes and stuff like that. So
it's evolving as they do.
Always
as they do. That's how this started. Just two guys sitting around a mic talking.
Just
and then,
a protean mass of not knowing what the fuck to talk about. And then it slowly takes shape.
And it turned into here we are. Two guys sitting around mics.
Hell yeah.
But now it's a little more structured.
That's all how right.
It goes, man. Caught the bug. So.
Well, it's a good bug to have, man. It's a good bug to have for sure. And I want to remind everyone, Plot Sick, you can check that out at swordraws.com. What about the podcast? Is there a website? You guys have a domain name they should check out? Or?
No, it's just mixler.com/ The Illustrated Friends. If you go to my website or my Instagram, which is the same thing, it's at swordraws, or The Illustrated Friends Instagram, which is at The Illustrated Friends. I post about it pretty much every time we're going to do it. We do some music blocks too, so I'm always soliciting bands to come and give us songs and shit. So really? Sunday nights around 9.
Sunday nights at 9. We will put we'll put something on Twitter, Facebook, all that stuff.
Oh yeah,
we are going to get the word out for you, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, y'all.
No,
and thanks for having me back on the show, you guys. Man, I love fucking coming on your show. We can talk about shit.
Yeah, anytime at all. We have a blast having you on the show. So, thanks for being here, man. Jake, what do we have on the website?
We've got all things that are good. We've got links to all of our previous episodes, as well as our special and most illustrious guests. We've got access to all of our social networking outlets, like Twitter and Facebook, where we are at CannedAirPod, and Instagram, where we are at Canned_Air. Furthermore, if you really, really like what we do, head on down to Patreon and throw a couple of bucks a month our way. You just wouldn't believe how far it goes. So, you know, don't hesitate to even $1 a month is incredible. So really, nothing is too small.
Yeah.
But if you hit that $5 mark, you have access to the Founders Club Patreon exclusive podcast, which is a hell of a lot of fun to make, and we've been getting some really good reception as well. So I think it's well worth your time. Am I missing anything?
I don't think so. What if? Remember, what
oh,
if?
Oh, yeah, what if?
Find us on Facebook at What If PDCST and on Twitter. And on Twitter at What If Series. You know, give us a follow there. Be in the know the second it launches. And again, just a few weeks away.
And mind you, we're not some SoundCloud rapper who keeps telling you there are big things coming but never actually unveils them. This is happening. We've put way too much work into this.
And if you need an example of what the show's going to be like, there are Canned Air episodes that have links on that Twitter feed, so you can see exactly what we're going to be doing. And I just can't wait. We've recorded about 6-7 episodes thus far,
not a single one of them I haven't loved.
Damn, a couple of them we've walked away from
a little bit changed.
About 2 days later. Like the If Animals Could Talk,
that one stuck with me.
Was incredible. It was like Jack hit me up the next day and said, I saw 3 raccoons on the way home, 2 deer, and a possum. Like he was just like,
I'm so aware of them now.
Aware of all the animals. And a quick reminder on Adult Swim. First, we have Dream Corp LLC season 2, October 21st. At midnight, set those DVRs at the Sunday. And then even earlier than that, October 14th at midnight, also a Sunday, we have Harvey Birdman, Attorney General. How can you say
moving up in the world.
How can you say no? Set the DVRs for this Adult Swim greatness, because that's typically always what it is, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, they had a segment called DVR Theater at one point, I think, where it's just like so late at night they weren't even telling you to watch it. Just record it.
All right, I think that's probably going to do it for this week. So until next time, I am Jeremy Colley.
I'm Jake Runyon.
And this is Adam Sward.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
Little Jimmy.
Hey, it's Alpine.
While you're waiting on your negligent parents to find you, why don't you pull out your mobile device and get on cannedairpodcast.com? Shoot, it may even help him find you.
Well, that makes no sense.
Hey, what are you doing near my son?
Time to split.
G.I. Joe.
Hello, I'm recording a message for Skype call testing service.
Message.
I have a micro penis.
What?
Science! Hello, podcast fans. Want to get weird with us? Come check out the Mad Scientist Podcast. We are a weekly show that looks at the history, philosophy, and hard facts behind your biggest paranormal questions.
Did the government really pay for a psychic spy program?
Yes!
Is it true that surgery got its start in grave robbing?
Yes!
Can a roller coaster really kill you?
Legally, we can't say so for sure, but sometimes... Yes!
Mm.
Join myself, Chris Cogswell, and my co-host, Marie Mayhew, as we examine the science, philosophy, and history behind the strange and unusual. All to discover what's possible and plausible versus what's, well, just made up. Check us out wherever you find your favorite podcasts. The Mad Scientist Podcast.